You drink coffee, I drink coffee, just about everyone drinks coffee. So why bother with anything but the best? Darren's coffee is roasted at his new shop in Claremont, Indiana. And coming soon, you can order on Amazon and support the show by using Scott Horton's affiliate link. Darren'sCoffee.com. Because everyone deserves to drink great coffee.
All right, y'all. Happy New Year and everything. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. And find all the archives and all the important things at libertarianinstitute.org. libertarianinstitute.org/Scott Horton Show for this show and all the podcast feeds and all those things. And please help support. It's not quite too late to write it off on your taxes this year at libertarianinstitute.org/support. All right. Introducing our good friend Eric Margolies, foreign correspondent, author of War at the Top of the World, and American Raj, Liberation or Domination. Welcome back to the show, Eric. How are you?
Merry Christmas to you, and I'm glad to be back with you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been way too long. I'm very happy to have you back on the show. And what I want to talk to you about, I'm having trouble deciding, honestly, because I invited you on to talk about Palestine, and there's so much important stuff there. But then I was talking with Eric Garris from Antiwar.com just before I called you. And he was telling me, yeah, they announced that later today they're going to announce covert action against Russia in retaliation for their alleged interference in the recent American election. And I just don't even know what to make of that. They announced that they're going to announce covert action against Russia? Over what now? I just don't know what to make about any of this. Eric, what do you say?
Scott, it sounds scary as hell. We have the twilight days of the Obama administration, which has proved itself. While it has some good feelings and good plans, it's proved itself hopeless in foreign affairs. It's run by a bunch of ninnies, and now they're going to, you know, draw the sword and wave it at the Russians. And the Russians are people who are not easily intimidated. And God knows what they're going to do. I hope it's something silly that doesn't get the Russians too angry.
Yeah, you know, I just read this thing by Daniel Larrison where he talked about our country's leadership, as they call themselves, their absolute inability to look at any of these situations through the eyes of the states that they're threatening. And I mean, in this case, he's talking about China and Taiwan. But, you know, the presumption is, yeah, we're American, we say so, don't worry, they'll back down. But they never do. They have interests. And even a country like China, a country like Russia, who knows they can't win a war versus the United States, there are some lines where they would rather die trying than give in to the USA. And yet our government just refuses to accept that, even though if Russia or China ever started making demands on America like we make on them, we'd nuke them.
Well, that's the scary point, Scott. We're kicking sand into the face of these countries and trying to browbeat them or intimidate them. These are nuclear-armed states, and we're doing the one thing, as I've been writing for years, the priority of American foreign policy is never to get into a confrontation with a nuclear-armed power. And that's exactly what we're doing. The Obama people have blundered us into that. And it is extremely dangerous. The only thing worse than what we've done is, I was thinking, if Hillary Clinton had been, who was very aggressive in her policy proposals, might have gone into a more scary confrontation.
Right. Well, now, so yeah, speaking of which, you know, Donald Trump didn't have any problem intervening, and we're going to get back to Palestine in a minute, but he didn't have any problem intervening in the politics of the UN resolution last week, or earlier this week, I mean to say. My days are all off here. I wonder if you think there's a possibility of a Trump override here. I mean, couldn't he actually just say to a camera, hey, CIA, don't even bother implementing whatever Obama's telling you to do, because I swear to God I'm canceling it on the 20th. And, you know, like, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to do that. That would be the right thing to do, so I wouldn't expect it. But he really could at this point, right? Just say, that is not our policy in 2017, kids.
He could. I hope he will. He's not long on the, policy. He just tells him, stop it. He's a businessman. He's used to giving an order and seeing it done. The CIA now has their knickers in a twist because they're afraid there's going to be a massive purge at the higher levels of the CIA for getting involved in trying to defeat the Trump campaign. It was blatant. It also showed that there's some very extreme people at the CIA who were not evident until then. And so he's going to... He's got them scared, and they're running, and it's good. Every CIA needs to be shaken up every decade.
Yeah, I mean, I know it ain't worth anything, but I keep trying to tweet Trump that, hey, the CIA is making it pretty clear here that they're the boss, not you. What do you got to say about that? Because, I mean, really, that is how it's going to be. We're going to find out real quick who's serving who up there. And, you know, my more cynical prediction has always been that, you know, not even really considering the transition period, but just I always would say on his first full day in office, he's going to meet with the generals and the admirals and the CIA, and he's going to tell them, do whatever you want, just keep me informed, and that kind of thing, right? Because, like you just said, he's a businessman. This isn't really his thing. But then again, if also, as you say, they are this hell-bent on interfering in American politics and even trying to prevent him from being elected— I think you're probably referring there to things that Michael Morell said about him being Putin's puppet,
exactly.
And this kind of thing before the election. Then, yeah, there's going to have to be a big fight here, right? Somebody's going to have to win. Is it going to be, you know, the guys we've never heard of, or is it going to be the elected leader of the executive branch?
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's and as you say, they really have thrown down the gauntlet in a way that it sounds like you're surprised, huh?
I am surprised that they would be that overt. In all my long years, I've never seen the CIA come out into the daylight and be so aggressive and assertive and out of line.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to hope that they've really overdone it and made an enemy out of the president. And it seems like, you know, for all their sames, on a personal level, Trump is not Barack Obama, the pushover, walk all over me and do whatever you want, whether you're Petraeus or Netanyahu or whoever. I mean, Trump might be, you know, soulmates with Netanyahu, but he's not going to let Netanyahu push him around. He's not going to let anybody push him around. You try to push him around, he's going to push back just by nature, whereas Obama's, you know, born to be a doormat, apparently. So, yeah, I mean, it seems like if there was ever a chance that a president would really get in a fight with the CIA and win it, we may be about to see it. I don't know.
It will be fascinating and overdue.
Yeah. I sound so naive thinking that. Anyway, somebody's going to read somebody the rules and things are going to get straightened out. Let's talk about Palestine for a minute here. There's so much going on. The new UN resolution and the politics of the UN resolution in America and in Israel. There's the situation in Palestine. And honestly, Eric, I think, just judging by my own former ignorance, I think most people just really don't understand. You know, they pass a resolution saying, you know, you got to get out of the occupied territories and stop colonizing the occupied, militarily occupied territories with your civilian population. And then the reaction is, you hate all Jews. You're trying to kill Israel. And any Jew who goes along with you is a capo, like the Jews who were forced by the Nazis in the concentration camps to kill other Jews. Even though, in other words, you're promoting the complete and total destruction of the entire state of Israel and every Jew that lives in it, even though, but that's not what the resolution said. The resolution is about the occupied territories. But the point is that so people are just confused. Most people, they've never seen a good map. They never had this really explained to them. And Israeli Hasbara works. People might think that if you're pro-Palestinian, what you're saying is there can't be an Israel anymore. Eric, is that the situation?
Well, it's not either on a philosophical level or on a practical level on the ground. This is a hysterical knee-jerk reaction which is used by the ardent supporters of Israel as one of the most effective tools in fighting people they don't like. And, you know, I'm surprised they haven't quite come out and accused Obama of being an anti-Semite. I think somebody did recently. It's not at all a question of anti-Semitism or trying to wipe out the Jewish people or anything like that. It is, as some here would say, an effort to reach a fair and just solution, but also an effort to save Israel from itself. Because as many Israelis have written, particularly on the left, that Israel cannot be a apartheid state where 50% of the population is Arab without imposing some kind of totally anti-democratic methods.
So now John Kerry gave his big speech yesterday, you know, basically explaining the abstention. The U.S. didn't vote for the new U.N. resolution, but they abstained and let it pass for the first time in the Obama administration, now that he's a lame duck. And Kerry came out and gave his big too little too late speech. And really, I think, like you just said, he was saying, we're at the end of the road now. Basically, if you don't choose a two-state solution now, it's going to be too late the day after tomorrow, if it ain't already, he didn't say. And so you better hurry up and do it, or else you're going to be in this situation, as you just said, where it's a de facto one state, where the West Bank and Gaza really, for intents and purposes, have been annexed by Israel, since we know they'll never give up control of them ever again anyway. And so, therefore, you have half the population completely disenfranchised and with no right to vote, with no right to even have their own elected police force in their own city. And instead are under the foreign occupation, basically, of the other half of their country. And so what Kerry said, though, was that's not tenable. You won't be able to be Jewish and democratic in that situation. So we know you're going to choose Jewish, not democratic. But the rest of the world won't stand for that. But then, so my question for you is that really true? And what's the rest of the world going to do about it other than sit around passing some more resolutions anyway?
Scott,
one more thing. After all, there are a lot of undemocratic states in the world, including ours. But, I mean, even officially, there are a lot of undemocratic states in the world. So,
well, the right wing in Israel holds all the cards. I mean, they've worked very cleverly and assiduously to put themselves in the catbird seat, if I mix metaphors here. The rest of the world can huff and puff and, you know, fulminate against Israel for what it's doing, but and it has been, too, in many ways. But there's really nothing they can do unless there is an all-out campaign to isolate and ostracize Israel, as was done with South Africa. And it won't happen, because Israel's supporters are very strong in certain key states, i.e. the United States, Canada, Britain, and France, and to an extent Germany. So I don't see there's anything that can be done, and I think the outside world will just eventually, after making speeches and things, will just turn a blind eye to the situation.
Yeah. All right, well, so when President Horton nominates you to be envoy to go over there and finally settle this thing, what's your best plan? One state or two? Or neither? Or what?
Oh, well, you know, in my book, American Raj, I devote a whole section to what would be a fair and equitable solution to this problem. And I strongly believe that after watching this process for over 50 years, for God's sakes, that you have to have two states. And remember, you know, today the occupied West Bank represents less than a quarter of the original Palestinian state. So the Palestinians will have to settle grudgingly for a truncated minor little state, but at least it must be a contiguous state. It can't be little Bantustans of Arab population surrounded by Israeli settlers and military forces. It's got to be a separate Arab state that has certain amount of independent action, though in it's inevitable that even an independent Arab state would end up as a vassal state of Israel. Israel is too powerful economically and militarily for there to be any other solution. the Jewish settlers, well, they that situation could be ironed out by moving, by border adjustments, moving the including in Jewish settlements in the, or excluding them from the new Palestinian state and giving the Palestinian state some territory from Israel. This is a logical solution. It's been on the table for decades. Most right-thinking people think this is the solution, but the Israeli right wing, which is dominant, will have no part of it. They want everything, and then probably more.
Mm. Well, it seems like, never mind even right-thinking people, at least according to Kerry's speech yesterday, and I guess it's been a little while since I checked these numbers myself, but he said majorities in Israel and Palestine agree with this. That every, you know, it's a consensus for the two-state solution, but it's these right-wing parties that prevent it anyway, even though they're actually a minority.
Well, they're a minority, but they've got the country by the throat, and Israel's right-wingers are not genteel right-wingers as in Europe. These are very extreme people. The Israeli left calls them fascists, and that they seem to be popular in Israel and seem to be the wave of the future. It's ironic because people are saying that Netanyahu is actually represents the left wing of the right wing, and if he goes, he'll be replaced by far more extreme people, though I don't know what that is. It's hard to imagine.
Holy crap. So, man, yeah, it seems like if this was ever going to happen, it should have been Ronald Reagan. He would have been the only one with the political capital to say, look, do what I'm telling you right now, for your own good, as you said, to save you from yourselves, you idiots.
Trump, yes, or President Eisenhower could have done that. Trump could have done that, but he is entirely surrounded by a coterie of ardent Zionist lawyers, and he's made clear that, and in my dealings with the Trump camp, that it's Israel uber alles, and Israel can do no wrong, and that to hell with everybody else.
Yeah, that sure seems to be the common theme up there, and yeah, Mondo Weiss, they've been writing about this lawyer Greenblatt, who's not the ambassador, but is going to be in charge of the peace talks and whatever. And I guess he and the new ambassador both are agreed that Israel should just annex the West Bank. And in other words, are avowedly pro-apartheid and not ashamed of it at all.
That's quite right. There's been this pretense over the years that, oh, we're talking peace, while they're gobbling up the West Bank, or as the Palestinians put it, they're telling us to share a pizza while eating it. But now the cat's out of the bag, another mixed metaphor, and it's clear that occupation, annexation, is going to happen. And let's not forget the Golan Heights either,
right?
Which Israel annexed against international law, which it's condemned for doing. There's that issue too.
Yeah, well, actually, go ahead and talk a little bit more about that, because absolutely Golan gets the short shrift on this show and in virtually all discussions of the occupied territories.
It's gone down the memory hole. The Golan Heights is a plateau that rises up from the Galilee region and looks down on northern Israel. It's very strategic. I've walked the whole length of it on both sides, on the Israeli and on the Arab side, the Syrian side. At the northern end is Mount Hermon, which is not only a fabulous listening post because it looks deep into Syria, but it also is one of the region's main sources of water. And in after the 67 war, one of the objectives of the Israelis in that war was to seize Golan, which they did. They were almost ejected by the Syrians in 73, but they've dug in. They've ethnically cleansed about a quarter million Arabs who lived in the area, many of them Druzes. And the Israelis are understand the strategic value of Golan because radio intercept equipment on Golan could listen to what's going on in the office telephones in Damascus, and more important, Israeli heavy artillery on Golan can reach downtown Damascus, and they can see anything that's happening. So it's very important, very strategic, and the Israelis have said they're never going to give it up, no matter what.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Yep. Well, you know what? That's exactly what I was going to you were just reminding me of something. I was going to quote those exact words to you from G. Gordon Liddy, driving a cab, listening to right-wing talk radio in the 1990s, and he gave that exact speech, but about the West Bank. And he said, well, first of all, he was saying, look, these settlements are so big, they're never going anywhere, all right? You understand? But then the other thing he was saying was, this is the high ground. And so forget biblical Judea and Samaria and all of this orthodox, this, that, and the other thing. This is a military matter. They're never going to let the Arabs control the West Bank because of just military topography and strategic doctrine. And so and then he ended with those exact words, and they're never going to give it up.
Never. And in fact,
is David, that really right, too, about the West Bank being high ground compared to Israel?
There are high points on the West Bank, and its elevation is higher than the plains of what is now Israel next to it. But, you know, that, all of that stuff was said in the 60s and 70s, and in today's modern military world, the greatest danger are long-range rockets and missiles, and long-range heavy artillery. A lot of that is outdated, some of the military geography, but yeah, it's still important. There is no Arab army that could cross into the West Bank and then attack Israel.
Right.
There isn't one. The Jordanian army is under the thumb of the Americans. Jordan is an American-Israeli protectorate. The Iraqi army has been destroyed. The Iranians are too far away. They'd have to come by bus. the Egyptians have been bought off. So Israel has no military threat at all.
All right, now, here's a question somebody asked me on Twitter that I just saw, actually, paging through here. Any thoughts on giving the West Bank to Jordan and Gaza to Egypt?
Oh, yeah, that idea has been floating around for a long, long time. Ariel Sharon, the former Israeli prime minister, always used to say, he says, you know, Jordan is the Palestinian state. Well, he may not have been that wrong. You know, Jordan is a majority of the people who live in Jordan are Palestinians. And
well, that's because they're refugees from 48, though, right?
Exactly, and 56, and it's 70, the 73 wars. So, but Jordan is really a Palestinian state with a Bedouin army that's supported by the U.S. and Britain that keeps the king there in power. But who came down from Mount Sinai and said that we have the right to play Monopoly with all these different countries? And Jordan, you're the new Palestine, and what happens to the Jordanians, and so on?
Yeah, it sounds like all Sharon meant was he would like to kick all the Palestinians in the West Bank across the river, or at least into it. That's what he really meant by that, right? Was the West Bank belongs to us? You can beat it to the other side of the water there.
Yeah, get lost, go live in the desert.
But what about, this guy's asking, well, what about going ahead and giving the king of Jordan sovereignty over the West Bank and giving the dictator of Egypt sovereignty over the Gaza Strip? And then that way, you know, I mean, there's a couple different ways to spin that, right? You could argue that, you know, hell, either of those will always be better than occupation by the IDF.
And since they're never going to get their independent state anyway, maybe they would be better off under the jurisdiction of these other foreign governments. What about that?
No, I don't think that would work. Palestine is a bomb waiting to go off. I mean, Jordan. And we're seeing increasingly outbreaks of violence there and things. How long the Hashemites will rule Jordan remains to be seen. As for Gaza, well, frankly, from what I've seen, and I've been through the air of Gaza numerous times, they're probably better off under the Israelis than they are under the Egyptians, because at the head of the Egyptians, of course, is this brutal little military dictator, Field Marshal al-Sisi, who Egypt has one of the world's worst human rights records. And it's Egypt that is really ruling Gaza in the sense that it's strangling it, and it's cut it off from all outside contacts.
Yeah, at least under the old sock puppet Mubarak, he allowed some kind of black market trade through the Rafah crossing and that kind of thing, right? But now that's been completely shut down.
That's right. And Mubarak al-Sisi is also pretty much under the thumb of the Israelis. You can see with last week's UN resolution, mm-hmm. Or was it this week? I'm sorry, I'm thrown off by Christmas.
Yeah, me too.
Current UN resolution that Egypt was going to propose it as one of the co-sponsors, and then backed off under Israeli pressure.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I mean, and I'm sure they probably just made a phone call to him, too, but apparently Netanyahu called Trump. There's a write-up on this at Mondo Weiss for anybody who wants to find it. Netanyahu called Trump, and Trump either called himself or had his people call Sisi. And he ain't even sworn in yet.
Yeah, it's irregular, as the British would say. And well, al-Sisi will do anything for money. So he'd become a Christian Scientist if you paid him enough. So that's probably what happened.
I was going to make a crack about the monitor there, but I'll save it. Hey, so tell me this: how many Palestinian refugees are there in other countries? You mentioned the population of Jordan is now even a majority Palestinian population.
That's right. It's very difficult to come to a number. In my book, American Raj, I struggled for a long time trying to ascertain the correct numbers. My best estimate is about 5.5 million people.
Hmm. And so then, you know, if they ever did have a two-state solution, could you even bring those 5 million refugees to the West Bank? I mean, is there even enough land and resources for them, or they're going to either be refugees in foreign countries, or someday they're going to have the right of return back to their grandparents' homes?
Well, that's what they're asking for. The Israelis keep saying never.
Well, listen, I'm willing to entertain the idea that when the Israelis say never, they really mean it. So I guess I'm asking the kind of the runner-up question first. Well, what about, is there enough, assuming that they had independence and more or less free economies and were allowed to prosper, is there enough room for the refugees to come home if Palestine is limited to just the West Bank and Gaza?
Probably not, and it's certainly not in the hand-to-mouth economy of the West Bank, the subsistence economy. There's no room. Now, remember, the Israelis have moved in 600,000 settlers into the area, armed settlers. And on top of that, they moved in 1 million Russians into Israel proper and the West Bank. So there's always some room, but I don't think there's enough room for 5.5 million. And the Israelis are saying that they would never accept anything that would, as they put it, alter the Jewish character of Israel.
Yeah. All right, now, you know, I don't know what's really the smart question to ask you about East Jerusalem, really, other than, I don't know, man, tell me what you think is the most important thing for people to understand about the situation there.
Well, East Jerusalem was always Arab, and it has some Jewish holy sites in it, but
the Israelis took the western half in 1948, right?
Right, and they built up all around it. But now what they're doing is starting to move into the old city, as we call it, and evict the Arabs who live there and make it more Jewish, if you want to put it that way. All the political solutions to the problem that have been proposed call for the old city of Jerusalem to be the capital of the new Palestinian state. And that's what the Palestinians keep demanding. But according to the Israelis, another thing that will never happen.
I don't know. I mean, the Obama years, as we talked about at the beginning, this is the first resolution that they've even done. He started out with his big Cairo speech, but he backed off before spring 2009 was over. So that was the end of that. Kerry made a half-hearted effort at a thing. You know, Andrew Coburn reported that Obama was jealous and Obama wouldn't give Kerry the backing he needed. And I don't know if Kerry could have accomplished anything anyway, but that Obama didn't want Kerry getting the credit. And so, because Kerry's just too big of a competing political personality or something, so that he didn't really give Kerry the support he needed to, I guess, make the demands on the Israelis back when he first became Secretary of State in 2013. And so, really what we've had basically is Obama might as well not have even mentioned Palestine this whole time, right? We've just had the steady creation of more and more facts on the ground in the West Bank, and it's just been the status quo. But yeah, so I wonder whether you think things will be that much different under Trump. They're going to go ahead and really move the embassy to East Jerusalem, really go ahead and annex the West Bank, and just declare for all time that they're not pretending about Oslo or peace anymore. And, you know, in other words, another 8 years of more and more kind of slow motion conquest, or a whole new, you know, turn of the page here, you think?
I think it'll be colonization of the West Bank and Golan will be accelerated. There'll be no this pretense that it's they're just bringing a few people and will be dropped. And what interests me is that first of all, the Israeli far right wing wants to ethnically cleanse most of the Palestinians out of the area. I think this will happen under the pretext of terrorism. And secondly, in the Israeli right wing, far right, there is the words of David Ben-Gurion echo, and that is that he said, I have this quote in my book, that it is not for our generation to set Israel's borders, and that's up to future generations. What this means is that Israel, which played a role in encouraging the Syrian civil war, is probably has some designs on adjacent parts of Syria, maybe on more. We don't know. Never underestimate the power of fanatics.
Yeah, manifest destiny. It's just a bunch of brown people in the way. Look how uncivilized they are. I can't even understand the words that they're saying. Let's just kill them and take their stuff. That's the American way. I mean, the Israeli way. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, Israel is, you know, it's feeling its oats, too. Its economy is increasingly strong. It's a world leader in high-tech and military technology. It has an awful lot of smart people, and it's doing very well. And most important than that, it really has it really controls the United States foreign policy in regard to the Middle East. So you know, they've got Big Brother there. They've just got another $38 billion worth of weapons from the Obama administration. It's a very strange situation. Anyway, as I said, they hold all the cards there. So they're now feeling frisky and looking afar. Oh, they've found energy deposits off the Mediterranean, though They won't admit that any of it belongs to the Palestinians. So the future looks pretty rosy.
Yeah, for them. All right, now, so let me ask you one thing, just because I really like the optimism behind this point that Yakov Hirsch made, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe he's right. Yakov Hirsch from Mondo Weiss, I interviewed him, and he says, well, you know, here's the thing about Netanyahu is there are no exceptions. He talks to everyone like he is God and they are his servant. You know, we've joked over the years about how he treats Obama like his butler and that kind of thing, and it seems pretty obviously kind of a racist, bigoted thing to me. But what Yakov Hirsch was saying is, no, he talks to everyone like that, everyone, always. And, in fact, as everybody knows, Trump doesn't know anything. And so Netanyahu is going to see himself in the position as Trump's instructor, and he's going to talk to him like that all the time, and Trump's going to end up drop-kicking him right out the door. Because nobody can stand Netanyahu because he's a piece of crap. Sorry, because he's a really hard guy to get along with. And so that maybe that could really, you know, redound to our benefit here. That at some point, again, Trump just on a personal level is not a doormat like Barack Obama. We all know Obama hates Netanyahu. He just won't ever do anything about it.
I can see that in part, but Trump knows nothing about the Middle East. It's very clear. But his closest advisors who are engineering this subject do. I mean, they know the extreme right-wing Israeli version, and they want it. Trump has already indicated that he will acquiesce to that. So yeah. Even though Netanyahu may be difficult and irritating, I don't think that's going to be the primary decision factor between the two of them.
Yep. All right, well, listen, man, I've kept you a long time here. I should let you go, but thank you so much for doing the show, and Happy New Year to you, Eric.
Happy New Year, Scott.
You're great.
Cheers.
All right, y'all, that is the heroic Eric Margulies. You got to read his books, War at the Top of the World and American Raj, Liberation or Domination. He writes at ericmargulies.com, spelled like Margolis, ericmargulies.com, and also at uns.com, U-N-Z, uns.com. That's Scott Horton Show. Thanks, y'all. Check out the archives and all the everything at libertarianinstitute.org/Scott Horton Show. Oh, yeah, and listen, it's a 501c3, and if you go to libertarianinstitute.org/support, you can check out all the great kickbacks, silver, QR code, silver commodity discs. That is the greatest idea of a currency ever that I've ever heard of in my life. They're so awesome. You got to check them out, all you libertarians. We got 5 or 6 different books on offer, and also you can enter a raffle to win a 2-week stay in the rainforest of Costa Rica at Verde Energia, and it's a 2-week permaculture course. And these guys are basically libertarian hippies who are in the business of replanting the rainforest and saving it. And they're making money. They're planting more trees than they're cutting down. And they're proving how it can work. And if this is your thing, then this is for you. And let me tell you, you've got very little competition at this point, too. So you want to join up that raffle, find out how, at libertarianinstitute.org/support. And write it off on your taxes. This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.